welcome to another week of Peak to Pit. I'm Allie Peak alongside TJ Pittinger, and we had exciting weeks this past week. TJ, there was some birthdays in our houses.
Yeah. I don't know any of the zodiac signs, so, and I really don't care. So I hope that doesn't get me canceled in 2020 because they're absolutely meaningless. But whatever our daughters fall in, we've got three birthdays here in mid to late August. Your girls were last week. Elena's birthday was yesterday. That was a fun day.
Yeah, they're 5 days apart. That's crazy.
Yeah. So 5 days and 5 years. Yeah, but, or well, 5 days too. And 4 years, I guess. But
I'm trying to look up what they are. So my daughters are Leos and your daughter's is a Virgo, which I'm a Virgo as well, I guess, by judging by this. I don't really know anything about the zodiac either.
So I just know that it's pointless, and so hopefully somebody gets offended at that. But I'll try to defend anybody else throughout the rest of the show. So what did you guys do? I know a little bit, but what did you guys do to celebrate the first set of twins' sixth birthday?
So we actually had this yard sign company, it's called Tampa Sign Surprise, come and decorate our front lawn while everybody was asleep. So it had like super obnoxious happy sixth birthday Hadley and Hayden with like emojis and hearts and presents and whatever, just all over the yard. It was super ridiculous and over the top. They thought it was like the coolest thing in the whole world. And this is the first birthday where they can read. So that was kind of cool too, because they could actually read what the signs in the yard said. I'm trying to think. So Eric is such a girl dad, such like a softy, whatever. Like anything I come up with, he has to come up with something else to kind of like push it over the top. So I had decorated the downstairs. They decided like 2 days before their birthday that they wanted to have Harry Potter theme, which would have been nice if they told me like 2 weeks before, but regardless. So I hung like a Harry Potter birthday balloon, some Harry Potter like streamers from the ceiling. I got these giant blow up number six balloons. We built their birthday bikes and I, you know, wrapped all their ridiculous presents and stuff and set them all out. Then Eric goes and gets 100 latex balloons, blows them all up. And you know, upstairs in my house where there's like the bonus room and then there's that little hallway that goes to their bedroom, he filled that entire hallway, basically like floor to the top of their door, with balloons. And then he moved their inflatable tumble track in front of the hallway, so it kind of like blocked all the balloons in there. So when they opened their bedroom door, they all fell in on them. So he does this, but they wake up at 5:15 on their birthday, which is so much earlier than it ever was. But you know, if they, you know, your kid
that's
wakes
ridiculous.
Up. Oh my God, ridiculous. Ridiculous. They usually are not up till like 7:30, 5:15, they're awake. But generally, if somebody wakes up in the middle of the night or very, very early morning and they come sleepily into our room and I'm like, no, not time to get up yet. You got to get back in your bed. And so, you know, like they go back to their room. But when you open your door sleepily and you get assaulted by 100 balloons, you're awake. So bounding into our room, so excited. It's our birthday. It's our birthday. It's our birthday. I'm like, not yet. Go back to sleep. And they like go back into their room. Eric's like, I can't believe you sent them back. It's their birthday. So he, of course, gets up to go play with them at 5:15 in the morning with all of their balloons in the bonus room. I was like, you can have this moment. You go. So he did. I slept for a little while longer and took care of the babies. But it was super over the top, but just a forewarning for anybody that considers, you know, barricading their child in their room with their balloons. If they wake up early, there will be no going back to sleep.
What you said that you guys went to the Fire restaurant, is that right?
Yes, we went to Yamato's for dinner, which they've only gone out to dinner like maybe two or three times total since we shut down in March. So it takes on a whole different meaning now that we're, you know, hermits for the most part, to go out to eat. Like, I think for the most part, we've gone to this restaurant. Elena would love it. You need to take her. It's called the Happy Hanger in, I think it's technically Land O'Lakes, but it's, a private airport and the planes land. And it's basically like an old house. We always choose to eat on the porch because the porch faces the runway. So if you go on the weekends, all of these little prop planes are constantly landing, which the kids think are really cool. And then there's a hangar that's always open so the kids can walk around and like touch planes and stuff in there. They just think it's like the coolest thing ever. So that is basically the only restaurant we've been to until Yamato, so which they call the fireplace.
And I think Elena would like that too, just
she would.
Because of the fire. She likes whenever I grill out, she I mean, when you light a grill, the fire only lasts for like, I mean, a charcoal grill, the fire lasts for like 3 or 4 minutes and then it's done. But she always says, go see fire, go see fire. So she would love that.
She would. My nephew's 20 months. And she loves noodles
and stuff. So.
He's 20 months and he was there and he thought it was like the coolest thing ever.
What you said, they just a bunch of dumb stuff. Like they're into dumb stuff. What do you buy 6 year olds? Like what do they, what kind of stuff do they like?
Well, so their big present was that they got new bikes. They actually got new bikes when they turned 5 too, but they grew a ridiculous amount this year. So we need, and they learned to ride their bikes without training wheels this past year too. And so they want a bike with a kickstand. They want, the brakes on the handlebars. Like just, we're moving into like big girl territory here. And then they're, like I said, dumb things. There's like, it's so trendy to have those surprise toys, which is just kills my type A self. I do not understand purchasing something when you don't know what's going to be inside. That just stresses me out. But they're like super into like, you know, the LOL dolls, the Hatchimals, like things that you open to see what's in there. My sister got them Polaroid cameras. So they think those are super cool. What else did they get? They are super into JoJo Siwa. So we got JoJo Siwa stuff. This VTech makes this, they call it a phone, but it's more like a tablet that's phone sized and you can't make phone calls on it, but you can, it does have a texting app, which we actually got at the recommendation of a friend of mine who's a kindergarten teacher, because she was saying it's really good for their reading and spelling. So a parent has to, like, basically I have to download the app on my phone, which I have, and then I have to invite whoever can be friends with them through the texting app. So like right now they're just friends with me and Eric and a couple of my siblings and they can message us on there or whatever. But they're digging that. They're very excited.
Cool. Sounds fun. I'm sure the aspect of two birthdays at once are neat, or has to be neat. I wonder, I don't know how many people are tuning in to hear about our kids, but I don't care. So we're 7 minutes in and they can keep listening or hang up.
We will talk to sports and get to sports, I swear.
But the concept of doing them both at the same time, they're best buddies. So like, do they like doing everything at the same time? Or
yeah, right.
I guess they don't know any different. They don't, you know, there's no like, you know,
they don't know any different. To celebrate, and right. Themselves. But we always try, like, it does get difficult for me at their birthdays and Christmas, because if there's something that one wants that the other doesn't, like, I'm totally down to not get them both the same thing. But also I have to be wary because they get FOMO. So like so-and-so opens something that that's the thing that they've been requesting. And the other one's like, wait, I didn't get that too. So what I try and do is if I know that there's one or two things that only one wants and the other doesn't, I try and convince that to be the present that they get their sister for their birthday or Christmas. Mm. That way, like we give them all the same, but the different thing. And then that way that the kid that's giving the gift doesn't get FOMO. They think it's their idea. They picked it out. They are so excited to give their sister a gift that like they know their sister wants. So that's how we've been trying to play it so far. But I do think the benefit of twins is like I'm super extra. So I like decorating and being over the top for birthdays. So it's nice to actually get to make it worth it. I feel like I'm hitting two holidays on one day, essentially, because it's two kids. So I can totally justify going over the top.
Man, Christmas is going to be so much fun for you guys this year. Because, I mean, last year, not that it wasn't, but the babies were obviously so small. I don't even
remember Christmas last year. Yeah, I was Christmas so in a fog. Christmas is going
to be, I think I might even leave here and just come do Christmas with you guys just to see the madness that it is. But yeah, so good. Good stuff.
So what did you guys do for Elena? I saw the house you built her. Super cute. Good job.
That was a project and a half. So let me back up. On Friday, we took her to a character breakfast at Disney. We talked about that at the Riviera Resort. I feel like we're giving a bunch of shout outs and plugs to restaurants and businesses that don't need our money. But, you know, but anyway, so we took her to Topolino's Terrace at the 10th floor of the Riviera Resort, which was fantastic. You guys have done character breakfast, I'm sure. I like this new COVID style character breakfast where they don't stop at every single table and take forever taking pictures and then take the picture again, because with a 2-year-old, they never look at the camera anyway. Right. And so they want to look at the, they want to look at the character or Mickey or Minnie. Like, you can't get them to focus on camera or a stranger's camera when mom, dad, and Mickey are the ones holding you. So with this, they just kind of come out and they dance for a few minutes and then they walk around to the tables and wave. They'll stop and let you snap a quick picture of them, but there's no like redo or retakes. Right. Like Mickey's not looking away for a minute. So it was much better for my age kids. Right. You know, if your girls wanted to take pictures with the princesses or take pictures with Minnie or Donald or Daisy or somebody, you know, it may kind of suck for that. But for my age kid, it was perfect. Also, the food at Top of the Nose Terrace, amazing.
Like, oh, that's so good to know, because I feel like sometimes Chef, it's terrible.
It sucks. Chef Mickey's is terrible. You know, it's just a buffet. You know, it's an overpriced Golden Corral. Which we don't go to Golden Corral. I don't even know if they'll even exist anymore after COVID, but you know, Chef Mickey's is, you know, a lot of the food is not great, even at the resorts at those big, buffets and stuff like that. Whispering Canyon has good food. I'm shouting out all the Disney stuff today, but Top of the Nose Terrace was some of the best food we've ever had at Disney. It was so, so good. So, you guys should definitely go and check it out and do it. You know, Elena loved it and it was really cool. And then yesterday we didn't do anything super, super grand. I did build that, that house on Monday night. You remember when we were little, and maybe I know you girls have a little playhouse. I thought this was just going to be a big plastic playhouse with like four different plastic sides that you just kind of fit into each other. And then a plastic roof that you snap in. And I thought it, I told Kara, I'll put it together Monday night. No big deal. You know,
yeah, you I didn't want to
see it Tuesday. And if I would have just looked a little more closely at the picture Kara sent me, I would have noticed, but she just said like, hey, can we buy this? And she was asking just cause it was kind of pricey. And I said, sure, but that's all we're getting. And so, I opened this thing up at like 8 o'clock and I look at it and there are wood pieces. When I was little, it was just four pieces of plastic that you pop together, you know, like four big, not this, you know, it was massive. I started at 8 o'clock. I was done at 1:30. If I had it to do, I mean, I'd probably drill. I mean, there were 200 screws, you know, that you had to like drill in and stuff. So yeah, if I had to do over again, like having already done it once, I could probably do it in 2 or 3 hours.
The playhouse on our back porch? It's the same. I think it's the same company as yours. It's just not character themed. It's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, it was a lot. But I mean, the whole time I was enjoying doing it, and she's lived in that house. I'm sitting on the bed right now because the house is in the office that I usually record in. And so I can't, I mean, she's just in there making a ton of noise. So, you know, it's insane. So, she loves it. She had a great time. We didn't do anything real grand outside of that. Like I built that, but we got up and we made pancakes in the morning and then we went, you know, what did we do? We watched Rapunzel. We went to their, Elena's 2 year and Brian's 2 month checkup, both doing really well. Elena is the 98th percentile for height. Any women's basketball coaches that may be listening, you can go ahead and send the scholarship to us now. And we will sign, I don't care if it's UF, we will sign with the very first scholarship that comes in for women's basketball. We want all 4 years, not one of those 1 year at a time things. We went to the car wash cause she loves that. We got pumpkin spice lattes. We went to the park. We made spaghetti, which she loves. The most simple things like make her happy. And so we just did all of those things yesterday and then we'll party this weekend. Party on Saturday.
You know, I think she's at the perfect age where like, she doesn't need grand gestures. She like appreciates, I don't know, the favorites and you know, the routine almost more than anything else. And mine still are not really to the point where they like need over the top. They just happen to be gifted a mother that was over the top. So I've, you know, shaped them that way a little bit. But when the babies were born, somebody told me like, you know, when they're younger, it's big items, small price tags. As they get older, it's small items, large price tags. And we're still in the relatively small price tags for our stuff. Not looking forward to when they become smaller and more expensive, though.
Oh my gosh, no kidding. Although we just bought like the biggest thing we've ever bought her, and it was the most expensive thing we've ever bought her. So we're going the wrong way with that.
Yeah, but that'll last for so long. And honestly, Bryant will play in it too.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say all the kids that come over this weekend will be in there. I'm sure it'll be like for
sure. We always talk about, we're like, crap, what big presents are we going to buy our little twins? Because our big twins literally have everything. So I keep telling Eric, oh, well, let's donate, blah, blah, blah. And then we'll just buy another one when the girls are little. And he's like, are you kidding? Are you really telling me you're going to donate something and then a year later buy the exact same thing? I'm like, but they've got to be able to get something new.
We've got to be able to open something. So, but yeah, no, you're right. She just likes doing the simple stuff. Again, we didn't have any plans to go to the park or car wash, but she looked at us and said, go to car wash, go to park. And so
that's what she wants.
So we said, okay, let's go do it. You know, so we had a good time for sure. So speaking of having a good time, since we're 15 minutes in and we've only talked about birthdays and our kids, football is getting close. There's actually an FCS game this weekend, if I remember. Is it Central Arkansas? Saturday,
I think, against Austin Peay, right?
Yeah, so that's fun. Some kind of I know there's like boycotts and stuff going on right now in the NBA. There aren't any like great NBA games on Saturday night. The Lightning don't play on Saturday night, so the Rays should be done by then. So I'm all in. You know, I will say, as much as I want football back, like, we haven't lost any football yet. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I'm not like, oh my God, I got it. So, if LeBron would have been on, or the Lightning or the Rays, like, I probably would have watched that over an FCS game, but there's literally nothing else on. And so,
I'm watching football.
I'm all in on the FCS thing. Well, I'm going to watch.
I would have been watching it no matter who was playing, though. It didn't have to be a COVID year, but I do feel like I appreciate it a little bit more because I'm not sure if I'm going to get to have it the whole time.
I am 100% on board with that. I will watch it and enjoy it way more than I would have if not for COVID. And again, since the Lightning aren't, you know, playing a playoff game that night or whatever, then I'm all in. Like, I wouldn't watch a regular season, you know, one of, you know, some like 162 game baseball or something like that over it. But, you know, if it was like game 7 of a Lightning series, I probably would. But anyway, so that's coming back. Other, in the FBS, other teams are delaying their season. Do you see NC State?
I did.
Has delayed their season.
Yeah, they, I guess they had some positives. And so it's delayed, I want to say, from the 13th to the 26th of September, potentially. But I mean, we knew this was going to happen, right? We knew in terms of positives, there was 0% chance college football was just going to never have any. And they set the schedule up so that they had the flexibility to do this. So I don't really think it's anything to be concerned about yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to see this. I think that's why these schedules were built.
I don't like that it's happening prior to the season even starting. That is not great. But, I mean, it's okay.
I mean, I don't know if we spoke about – I don't think we did because I don't think we recorded since then. Since we took last week off. But I spoke with Barrett Salee, and he told me that he thought there was a very good chance that the ACC moved their schedule up to be in line with
the SEC,
SECs in the Big 12s. There's really no like right answer because everybody kind of has the same reasoning, but there's just different ways about going about it.
Right.
The SEC started their schedule.
Well,
later,
the ACC has 11 games too, and the SEC only has 10, which is also
one more
factor
to play. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you can, if you can get the games in, however you can get them in. I don't care if you start late or start early with more buys or whatever, but
I think it would be clear too. NC State will still play on the 19th. They just have a bye on the 26th. So that's where they're moving the NC State Virginia Tech game. The NC State Virginia Tech game was going to be September. It was 12th, not the 13th. I just looked it up. They moved it to the 26th, but they're still playing their game on September 19th.
So it's just a one week delay. They're not moving their whole season back. Yeah.
No. That's why they created this flexibility in the schedule.
I don't know how much I love it before the season starts. I mean, I guess I kind of get the idea just from, you know, they can't practice right now, and so they need to make up that time. But again, I don't know. I mean,
so they said there's 27 positive cases within the athletic department. They did not say, they said not all of the cases involve athletes. They didn't specify how many involved athletes or what sports they were involved in. So I mean, we can, by looking at this, assume it's football, but it may not have even all been football.
Yeah. So at that
point, and honestly, 27 is not that many given the course of what the student population is. And they did just move their classes to online. So, I mean, maybe that helps some. We'll see.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
it just gives people more time to party.
To me, it's crazy to shut down all of the, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not obviously the smartest guy, but to me, it's crazy to shut everything down. Like why you wouldn't just quarantine the infected and move on.
You know what's crazy?
If in that 27 includes like 15 starters on offense and defense and your head coach and one of your coordinators, then
right. Yeah,
it's probably best to shut it down and restart later because you still only get so many practices and stuff like that. So, you know, but if that 27 includes like you said, some support staff, some trainers, some people that aren't even associated with football,
equipment managers,
quarantine the sick and move on.
Interestingly, NC State reported 45 positives among their students the past week. And they said that they had three clusters. They describe a cluster as five or more cases that are related to each other, but they said that brings the student total to 501 positives since COVID outbreak began in March. So, I mean, when you think about there's 45,000 undergrad on their campus, and when you say since March, they've been home since March. So you're including numbers of students who tested positive, but not necessarily were on campus. That's a really, really, really small number.
Yeah. I mean, the percentage is incredibly low compared to really anything, but I mean, I get it. You know, I mean, people, you know, things get kind of blown up and bigger than what they're made to be. So, you know, things in Tallahassee and Florida seem to be a little better. I know we've had a couple outbreaks in Gainesville. I'm sorry. We've had a couple of outbreaks. People have quarantined, practice, the show goes on. Mm-hmm. Same thing for you guys. No outbreaks, no positives that they're reporting.
Yeah. Since the beginning of July, UF has had no positives, which is, you know, it means whatever these schools are doing are working.
Yeah. I have not heard of, I think Miami had some positives, very, very beginning or middle of the summer. But nothing major reported since then. Certain places are doing it well, others aren't. It probably is just like, you know, certain areas of the country, certain outbreaks that happen, it has more to do with like, well, if a bunch of guys go out and party or go do this, go do that, come in and bring it back, then, you know, it kind of spreads. If everybody's kind of doing the right thing and staying in, then
yeah, like, it'll be interesting to see,
UF, you know, or wherever it, you know, they're not going to get it.
Honestly, the players' discipline is going to determine whether these seasons play out or not, because it's not like self-generating in the locker room, right? They're not getting it there. They're getting it if they go out and then bring it back to the locker room. So it's how shut down from the rest of the world these players are willing to be. The universities can't mandate it, right? You're talking about players that do this for free. I mean, I you can argue their scholarships are payment, but this is not their job technically, right? So these coaches can't lock them away in their dorms and not let them see other people. So this is truly the honor system here. And the programs that have the least amount of numbers are going to be the programs with the kids who follow the directions.
We had Mike Martin Jr. on the pod the other night, and we asked him how he planned to enforce or implement any kind of COVID, you know, going out restrictions. And he just said, I mean, I'm just going to threaten them. I don't know what else to do, you know, tell them not to go out or they're going to get punished or have to run more or whatever, you know? So, I mean, it is kind of a weird situation because, you know, the coaches probably have pretty good, you know, success with, you know, the night before, you're not allowed to go out.
Sure.
I mean, they all lock them down. You know, they all usually go to a hotel room or whatever.
Urban Meyer used to have the 48 hour rule, right? Like you cannot be out 48 hours before a game. I think at one point it got moved to 72 hours because they were pushing it on that like 49th hour. But it is hard to say the whole week, especially like think about if a program is on a hot streak or a winning streak, that makes you more likely to be out and partying, right? That makes your college community more fun.
Right.
So that is going to be, the temptation is going to be real for sure.
So I don't know. I mean, hopefully, I don't know. You haven't seen, are there any other major program, I mean, how many programs are there playing? 14 in the ACC, right?
Yeah.
14 in the SEC. Was it 15 in the ACC this year with Notre Dame?
15 in the ACC.
So 29 and then 12, right? So,
well, of the major, 30, yeah, because there's normally 31. 66, I believe, in the Power Five.
But we've got 30-ish in only one that we've seen move a game or anything right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, so far only
obviously
one.
Obviously, we've got 2 weeks to go.
Yeah, but. And that was probably more precautionary than anything else because, they didn't tell us what players tested positive, but there's a good chance they were like, listen, look, our head coach tested positive. Can you please give us another week because he's not going to be able to be in the meeting room or, you know, whatever. I'm not saying he tested positive, but that's just, you know, theoretically, like maybe it was somebody important or something. And that's why they were willing to move it. But, you know, and then we've got lots of other group of five conferences playing too. And so there, I mean, we're out of the teams that are not playing, we're going to miss Ohio State for sure. We're going to miss Oregon. I can see, you know, an argument for Michigan and Wisconsin. Honestly, other than that,
USC.
I mean, if I happen to be awake and there's not an SEC game that's a barn burner or something that I'm watching, like, sure, maybe I'll watch Pac-10 at night or whatever, Pac-12 at night. But honestly, we're not missing. For me personally, anyway, there are maybe people on the West Coast would have a different answer, but we're not missing that much.
Yeah, I mean, it's Ohio State to me. I mean, I get the argument for Michigan. You know, I understand the argument for
some of Oregon. These other teams every once a year, twice a year, give us a great game to tune into. But week in and week out,
I mean, Oregon and Michigan to me aren't great. They wouldn't have competed for a playoff
but they could
spot,
have changed the playoff by somebody they that they finished, upset.
They would have finished in that second tier of like, you know, 7 to 15, right?
Honestly,
like you've got your top 4 to 5, 6 teams, and then you've got your second tier of like, you know, your second places in all the conferences.
Their beginning games, like usually they play great out of conference games in the beginning. That's probably where we would have missed some of these schools the most, right? The week one matchups that we don't normally get to see that are canceled, and that's kind of sad. Wasn't it supposed to be Alabama, USC this year? Like, I'm sad that that's not happening. There's, you know, some matchups like that. But in terms of changing the playoff picture, Ohio State is the only one that's not going to be playing that I think could potentially have changed who the Final Four would be.
In a conference-only schedule, I don't think playing a regular schedule, I would say this team, but in a conference only schedule, I think that Oregon would have been in there and been mentioned. Really, if anybody would have run the table in the Pac-12, I mean, they would have been mentioned. And
right, well,
and it may have been Oregon's year to do that.
That's probably the only way they get there, because generally we've got
in any year,
right. A conference only schedule is the only way. When they play other people, and we see that these teams that are, you know, only have one or two losses within the Pac-12, then get their butts kicked across the field by somebody from another conference, we devalue that team that is undefeated in there or only has one or two losses or whatever. So they never get there, even if they're undefeated for the most part. This would be
it. It would have been really, really interesting to me to have seen an undefeated Oregon and an undefeated Oklahoma as the fourth and fifth teams. Like, who gets in between those two? Because we all know that Ohio State was going undefeated. We all know that Clemson will very likely go undefeated. Your SEC champion is in. And then, you know, if an Oregon or an Oklahoma is undefeated, they're going to get in over a, you know, even if it's a one-loss Georgia or a one-loss Florida. So who gets in? Does the team – Oklahoma was the fourth best team to me last year, no matter what anybody says. The talent gap between them and number one was just so, so, so high. Oklahoma was, you know, deserved to be there. But because they got absolutely beat down and have consistently, would they throw Oregon in? Would they go ahead and stay with the team that they had been with? That would have been interesting for me to see.
This
so
actually plays out super well for the SEC, given that we're in conference only schedules, because honestly, if you look at the five conferences, the SEC is going to be the hardest to make it all the way through. I mean, it just is. So, but if the Pac-10 is, or Pac-12 was playing and the Big Ten is playing, I don't think there's any way you get two SEC teams, because the only way you get at two SEC teams any other year is because you've seen how they perform against other conferences and it looks favorable for them. They wouldn't have that opportunity this year. So I think it would be a lot harder to justify a team with losses against a team that potentially ran the table in their conference. So this is actually good for the SEC, because if they're going to have to play what I think is a tougher schedule than any other conference, it's nice to have the opportunity for two teams to be in.
Yeah, I think that by default, you know, you have to guess that the SEC is the team that gets another team in. The real only way that doesn't happen is if the SEC is more, and this may actually be the case, if the SEC is much, much more even this year and everybody finishes with two losses.
Well,
right?
I think the SEC is going to be more even this year, because it is, we always say so it's so hard to run the gauntlet, but now we've added two more teams to it. So with somebody's, so, with no patsies.
And so what's tough about that is, you know, I think I read some power rankings today, and this the general consensus on power rankings of the SEC is Alabama 1, Georgia 2, Florida 3, Auburn 4, LSU 5, A&M, and then there's a pretty good drop off.
Those 6 would, I mean, I think you can look at Clemson, you would look at potentially Ohio State, but obviously Ohio State's not actually in anymore. But outside of Oklahoma and Clemson, I don't think that your top 6 look any different when you talk about all the conferences playing. I mean, outside of throwing Clemson and Oklahoma in there.
Clemson, Oklahoma, I'd have Notre Dame in that mix.
You think Notre Dame is better than any of those 6?
I mean, I'd take Notre Dame. I mean, Texas A&M lost 5 games last year. I'd take Notre Dame to be just as good as A&M. I think that Texas would be right there with Texas A&M.
The point is that those 6 teams are some of the top, like at the very least, all 6 of those teams and are in the top 10 nationally. And that's, all those teams have to play each other.
I don't have A&M in my top 10. Oh, a top 10 without a Pac-12 okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my point is that, but all those 6 have to play each other for the most part. Like Florida doesn't play Alabama in the regular season, but they play everybody else that you listed.
Right. You know? And so my thought is if we get to a scenario where Alabama, Clemson wins out or loses one, it doesn't matter. Clemson wins out. Oklahoma or Texas wins out, right? Like they're in. Your SEC champion is in one way or the other. If Alabama has 3 losses but wins the SEC championship, they're going to be in, because it's just the year that it is. What do you do if the SEC, you know, Alabama's 10-1, right? Or 9-1, gets to the SEC championship and plays an 8-3 Florida and beats them. I'm sorry, 7-3 Florida and beats them. I mean, you're not putting Florida in as the runner-up then, right, with 4 losses. And you're not putting anybody else in because they've got more losses than that. So at that point, does a 9-1 Notre Dame make it? Does a group of 5 make it? Would this finally be the year a group of 5 makes it if Memphis or Cincinnati goes undefeated and wins out? Like, so that's kind of what's interesting to me is, what if the SEC absolutely cannibalizes itself? Because to me, I don't think there's an absolute head and shoulders team in the SEC like there normally is. LSU was head and shoulders better than everybody else. It was clear year before. Alabama's head and shoulders better than everybody else year before. Alabama's head and shoulders. So like, what if you do end up with kind of a cannibalized SEC? You're not putting a 3 or 4 loss team in. Does a group of 5 make it? Does a Notre Dame get back in just to get beat out? I mean, I guess there's also the possibility that, Texas wins all their games, Oklahoma wins all their games, and the winner of that, like the winner and loser of that game goes, you know, I think there's just a lot of scenarios.
What about this scenario? What do you do? Let's say Alabama runs the table during the regular season, but And UF goes 9-1 in the regular season. But UF beats Alabama in the SEC championship game. And then let's say you
both in.
Well, listen, then you, listen to the rest of my scenario here. And then let's say Auburn.
I don't even need to.
Auburn is 9-1. Their one loss is to Alabama. But then let's say Oklahoma's like 8-2, goes to the championship game, but loses to Texas, who's 7-3, and Clemson is undefeated. Is there a chance you get three SEC schools over a three-loss Oklahoma?
I mean, Clemson's obviously in. Florida and Alabama are in. I think that you have to I think that a three-loss SEC team, if that's the
one-loss SEC team. If Auburn's 9-1, let's say Auburn's 9-1, their one loss was to undefeated Alabama, but they don't go to the SEC championship game because Alabama's in the West. So they have one loss.
Auburn sneaks in over Florida in that situation, just like we've
But the in my scenario, UF wins the SEC championship game.
Oh, okay.
So, well, UF wins.
Now you're presenting like unrealistic things.
But I'm not. This could very well play out. So my question is there an opportunity for a three SEC teams to get in?
No, because Auburn and Florida play each other, so they can't be.
Auburn and Florida don't play each other.
Okay. So let me think. No, I don't think that they'll do that. My gut says that they won't.
So they would take a three-loss Texas or a three-loss Oklahoma over a 9-1 Auburn.
No, I just am kind of sort of just making up the fact that someone else is going to have a really high record. Like Notre Dame should win absolutely every game on their schedule in the sorry ACC except for Clemson. So if they win all their games except for Clemson, I think they'll throw a Notre Dame in based on name and brand recognition.
So there's a possibility we're looking at a two SEC, two ACC, no Big 12 representation then.
I think that's pretty possible. Again, I think the SEC is, again, going to somewhat cannibalize itself, and you really won't.
I think they are too, but I think that people voting also have to take that into consideration. I don't think that because your conference is easier, that means like, oh, great, just easier path into the playoff. I think they need to look
at. I mean, you're asking for something to happen that never happens because Clemson always has an easy schedule.
But you can't take a team that wins out on their schedule, I think, and leave them out. But my point is, I think if you even halfway survive this SEC schedule, you're better than a team with a couple losses from the Big 12. Even if more teams from your conference have already gotten in, are we looking for the most deserving or are we looking for the best? Because those are two different answers. If you're looking for the most deserving, then in my scenario, you put in the winner of the Big 12 because they won their conference. But if you're talking about the best games, odds are it's not a three-loss Big 12 champion.
Right. And my thought on that is always that it's a mixture of both. It's a mixture of the best and the most deserved. Like, there has to be some credence to winning a conference championship. What's tough is I don't know what percentage to give it. I think it's different this year than any other year, though. I mean, potentially, but there's a lot of years that teams schedule really, really terribly and have super easy out-of-conference schedules, and those schedules don't mean anything either. Like, you know, Florida's out-of-conference schedule this year wasn't going to do them any favors. Like, they don't play anybody out of conference. And so, you know, Florida is negatively impacted by their not being out of conference schedule because they had three easy wins coming. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, our schedule definitely got harder without it.
So, you know, the Big 12 schedule probably gets a little easier because when they have to play good teams theirs gets harder too because they just play crappy teams out of conference. Like, Oklahoma didn't have anybody good on the schedule. Right. So, you know, they would have picked up three easy wins where they rack up 80 points because that's just what the Big 12 does. So, you know, their schedule got harder too just by the fact that they don't have any easy give me wins to score a bunch of style points against. So, I don't know. I think that I'd say there's a 5% chance that three SEC teams make it in, probably just because I don't see Oklahoma finishing with three losses. I mean, they may finish with one, but if they a one loss
Just so you know, I'm writing this down and taking a picture of it on my phone so that we can revisit this in December.
Oh, I'm sure Ryan will check the tapes and pull it out when we get there. Yeah, I think that, you know, the possibility of what Florida, Alabama, and Auburn all finishing with just one loss is pretty crazy. You know, that would mean that you know what that would mean, and I don't think this happens. I mean, Georgia goes 0-3 against them. It would mean that A&M goes 0-3 against all of them.
Mm-hmm. And LSU.
LSU goes 0-3 against all of them. Mm-hmm. And so
I think LSU, you know, is the most likely of that happening of the scenario. They just lost so many people.
I think A&M, I would say that A&M is the most likely of that happening. But it's probably pretty close. I think there's a pretty significant drop off. I think that Alabama is a clear one. And then you've got, you know, small step down, well, a decent step down, Georgia, and then just like right under Georgia is Florida, and then decent step down again, and then Auburn.
So,
and then you drop down to LSU and A&M.
I can respect the putting Georgia over Florida given recent history. However, I will say I think them not having a quarterback is kind of gives Florida the edge there. If you look at like talent returning from both teams, I think until Florida beats Georgia, because it has been what, 3 years at this point, 4 years. I can understand Georgia keeping that spot, but I think in terms of where teams are sitting, I like where Florida's sitting better than I like where Georgia's sitting, because they have a proven quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, Jamie Newman threw for nearly 3,000 yards, 26 touchdowns, and 11 interceptions last year. So, I mean, he's not a slouch. He's obviously
He's new to that program. But, he's new to the system.
And, you know, so.
Georgia, and what do we say about transfers? Like, they don't work out more often than they do.
For sure. So, where they typically do work out is at your elite programs, like your Ohio States and Oklahoma and LSU and Georgia and teams like that, you know. So, you know, he does have that going for him. I also think Georgia returns so much on defense that they will be super talented there. And that's really where Florida has struggled with them. You know, we watched separately, but together through iMessage, we watched the cocktail party together, and we both just said, like, can Florida do anything on offense? So yeah. I think that, you know, but I think it's very close. Like, I'm willing to say the gap between 1 and 2 and the gap between 3 and 4 is closer than the gap between 2 and 3. I think Georgia and Florida are very close.
Yeah.
All factors considered. Yeah. I'm kind of a show it to me on the field telling guy. So I do need to see, you know, Mullen and then put it together, which, you know, I think this is the year to do it if it ever happens. And if it doesn't this year, then it probably never will, you know, consistently.
Yeah. I mean, this is the year we've talked about this for months. This is the year that this is a do or die year for Florida in terms of, are we going to be Mark Richt or are we going to be Urban Meyer?
Yeah. So they need to turn it around. I think there's a really, really good chance that Florida loses to Georgia and still goes to the SEC championship, which I know that's kind of a weird scenario, but Georgia's schedule is so, so tough with having to play Alabama and Auburn. And so, I mean, Georgia needs to, you know, a best case scenario for Georgia is going 9-1, losing to Alabama. And I think that I don't even know that it matters this year, but I was going to say, where is the Georgia Auburn game? That could be a big, if they have to go to Alabama twice, you know, to Alabama and to Auburn, UGA football schedule.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now too.
So it is at home, fortunately. So I think that's a big help for them. So, I mean, they'll be favored. Well, then there's this. Well,
Georgia, they play Auburn Georgia early, which I don't know if that's good or bad, but yeah.
Yeah, probably not great. Fortunately, they have a really, really easy tune-up game at Arkansas week 1.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, quarterback's going to have to take his licks there. But
they do. Their schedule plays out well for them. Go ahead.
Down the stretch.
Yeah.
They'll be favored in every game they play except for the game at Alabama.
So, interesting for them, they have Patsy hard in for the first six games. We're talking about Arkansas, then they go into Georgia, then they go into Tennessee, which the week I think Tennessee at the end of the season is actually kind of scary for me as a Florida fan. Tennessee, the last couple of years, they've been a different team the last week of the season than they were at the beginning of the season. So if you I personally always like having Tennessee early, so I think that's a benefit for them. That's usually an October game for them, a late October game. So, and it is there is a decent chance that they kind of prepare 2 weeks for Auburn, as opposed to preparing for Arkansas and then preparing for Auburn. They may prepare for Arkansas some. Like, I'm not saying they're going to completely ignore them, but I guarantee you there's some Auburn prep work going on right now for that game. And then they have Kentucky, and then a bye for Florida. So at the very least, they're putting 2 weeks in for Florida, but there's a decent chance they're putting in more than 2 weeks in preparation for Florida as well. And then, you know, like we said, Patsy's after that. So they really, we may know who's going to represent the East for the most part by the first week in November.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing about that is, you know, say Georgia loses to Alabama and comes into the Florida-Georgia game with just that one loss and then beats Florida. I mean, none of the – I think that they should win all four of the rest of the games, but the Georgia-Missouri game is always close.
Missouri plays everybody close, I feel like.
And South Carolina beat them last year.
Yeah.
And the game would be in South Carolina this year. So it's never over because just that one more right. The trouble with Florida-Georgia is always that once Georgia beats Florida – is it 3 years now?
Yeah.
Then Georgia is counted on – they need to lose – two more games.
Sure.
And that just, with how late the game happened, you know, like they may drop one to South Carolina, they drop one here or there, but they're not going to lose two more.
So,
but,
and for Florida, the last four games of them are the four easiest on their schedule as well. Cause after Georgia, they go Arkansas, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, Tennessee.
I think the Kentucky, Tennessee games, I pick Florida in both of them. I don't think
Tennessee
that,
scares me as
being,
I.
Both of them being at the end of the year, Kentucky's quarterback's really talented, and they're usually
the
really,
time,
really early.
The last time they're Florida really, played Tennessee.
In 2001.
Yes. Yeah. And that kept Florida out of the national title. If that game happens the week of September 11th, Florida plays in the national title game in 2001.
I mean, if they win.
Yeah,
but
they – but they – so we were missing our running back in December. He was healthy in September. They were missing their running back in September. He was healthy in December. I don't know why I can't remember who their running back is. Now I'm going to have to Google it. But he had like 300 yards rushing against us. He would not have played in the game had it happened when it was supposed to.
I'll still take Tennessee in that one.
No way.
I
remember staying in that game.
I think having them at the end of the year is kind of tricky. Florida's gauntlet is super tough. Having South Carolina, who always plays Florida tough, then having to go to A&M, then having LSU, then having Missouri, which is always a super tough game, and then having Georgia. I think it's five straight weeks. Well, you guys have the bye before the cocktail party too, but it's five straight games of
Travis Stevens.
Every week is a challenge.
Yeah.
So, and then you said if you lose any of the last four, I mean, that's on you. I think the Tennessee game will be more challenging than normal. I think Kentucky will be a tough game. But I think Florida wins both of them going away. And if not, it's like I said, bigger indictment on the team than
I think if Florida is undefeated or close, there is, Dan Mullen will have them ready to play. I think if he doesn't, that is definitely an indictment.
The Georgia game, or are you talking the very
no,
end
I'm
of
talking
the year,
if they, and the last four at the end. If they were to beat Georgia, if they're in a position to go, I think I think that Dan Mullen has them ready to go. Okay, so I Googled 2001. Florida lost 34-32. Travis Stevens, it's considered a top five individual Vol performance all time against Florida. He was Let's see. Does it tell me what his stats are? But yeah, it was moved because of September 11th. And we almost won anyway. Does it have his rushing yards? I swear it was like 300 yards. He had 19 carries for 226 yards and three touchdowns. He was injured in September.
So that would have been... So let me just look at something. So that... would have been against Miami or Ohio State?
Not sure. I'm not sure which one was the last one in. Ohio State.
Or was that the Miami-Nebraska?
Let's see. It would have been the 2002 National Championship because that happened in 2000. Let's see. Google is amazing. You know that? Okay. It was the Rose Bowl. MVP was Ken Dorsey. And it was Miami-Nebraska.
Nebraska, yeah. So I do want to say this. I think it's a good thing that you guys lost to Tennessee there so you don't have another loss to Miami. Because that Miami team was just – that's I don't like them. That's not me like hyping them or trying to give you a hard time. Like,
yeah.
That just was – you know.
Yeah, but nobody ever would shy away from the opportunity to try, right? No guy on that team would be like, you know what? I'm okay losing to Tennessee because we would have lost the national championship anyway.
No, not then. But like, so you guys haven't gone to a title game and lost it. But like, say yeah, you would have
Nebraska 1995.
Oh, Nebraska. No, I'm sorry. So question.
Fiesta Bowl. That was terrible. It's like 62-21.
If the option was given to you to replay that game with zero chance to win, like the same exact result would happen, or just go to the Sugar Bowl and win it, would you, for that season, would you take losing that way in the national title, or knowing you couldn't change it, like there's no option of, oh, we'll go play the game and see how it plays out, take being in the national title or just winning the Sugar Bowl that year?
I still think I'd take being in the national title.
I'd just take winning a different bowl. Because back then they weren't even really national titles. They voted on it afterwards.
Yeah.
So you don't even really get credit for going to like the national title game. You just happen to be, they played the field. I would like, if you could take away any of Florida State's three losses in title games, I would take away
96.
I'm not taking away any of them, but that's what I'm saying. Like if you could just take away the loss and just play in a different BCS bowl and finish like third for the year, as opposed to getting your brains beat in. Yeah, I would take the not loss anytime. If you're giving me the opportunity to replace any loss with a win, I'm always taking that. I don't care if it's in the national title game or not. You know, like saying you got your head beat in the national title game means nothing to me.
I mean, championship means something to me, but I don't know. I maybe can see your point there. That's all you're getting from me.
I hate for you to agree ever. So, but okay, talking about disagreeing, so a little news here. The Lightning, did you watch the Lightning game last night? They play again in a couple of hours here.
Yeah, they play and they went into overtime last night. I was flipping back and forth between the convention and the Lightning game. I've watched a lot of political TV the last 2 weeks. I'm trying to educate myself here.
Have you gotten, I don't know if you're doing much educating yourself from either of the political conventions this year, but I know what you mean by it. So Lightning up 1-1, tied 1-1,
yeah.
Hopefully go up 2-1 tonight against Boston. I think we're the better team at even strength. The problem is that our special teams are terrible. I don't know if Willie Taggart's coaching our special teams or what's going on, but they are so bad. And every time Boston gets a power play, I think it's a goal. Every time we get a power play, I'd rather just us take a penalty real quick so it can go to 4-4 because we're worse on the power play. So if we can keep it even strength, though, I think we win the series. The Rays look really good.
Yeah, right, Tampa's now teams are just crushing it right now.
Very good. The Magic, not our team. I think the Magic just picked up a win from Milwaukee boycotting their game. So I feel like that's the best thing that's happened to the Magic in years.
Yeah,
so that's good.
The Rockets and the Thunder just announced that they'll be boycotting, which means the Lakers are probably going to be boycotting tonight as well. I don't think there'll be any NBA basketball today.
So I wonder what ends up happening there. Do they just end up, you know, do they take like a day or two off? Do you think the season gets canceled? Do they resume in a couple of days or a week?
I think they resume in a couple of days and they make this game up.
I think the way this first one has gone down, I think it is a win for the Magic. I think not like a moral win. Like, I think it's an actual win.
Well, I just saw an ESPN reporter tweet that NBA sources say the Orlando Magic will not accept a forfeit.
So if that's the case, then they're just kind of delaying it. Because correct. In a series, you can't just say,
cancel it. It has to be played at some point.
It has to be. And, I mean, somewhat ironically, I understand what the point of all of this is. But, you know, even if they did just cancel it and say a best of six, I mean, Milwaukee would just win the next game anyway. And so you don't have to play all seven games in a seven-game series always.
Correct,
so
right.
It's interesting to me as to what ends up happening with it. So I did read a funny tweet, not to make jokes about, you know, things that are being protested, but somebody said, how pissed are the Magic players right now? Thought they were going to go get to see their families tonight, but it's going to be at least two more days stuck in the bubble for them. The Magic are terrible. And so CNN is reporting that the Lakers and Blazers had decided to boycott game five. So it'd be interesting to see how
I think that I mean, and I don't want to get into political stuff, but I feel like there's a way they could have spun this as we're taking the day off because we want to give reverence to a situation that really needs our attention. I don't even know that you need to call it a protest. You can just say, like, we don't feel right playing a game today because there's bigger things going on. I almost think if you call it a protest, but the game gets rescheduled, it kind of lost some of its power because the game still gets played. If you say, you know, we're delaying because we want to make sure everyone's paying attention to things bigger than basketball or something like that. There's a way to, you're still protesting. The game's still not happening, but I think that there's a way to word it that doesn't make it look like it didn't mean anything when this game gets played 2 days later.
Yeah, no, I completely.
And I mean, these are serious issues going on. And I do think, I think players should be able to use their platforms for good. But I think that there's probably a more effective way or just to word it. I mean, same outcome, right? No games today. But I think the NBA as a whole really honestly could have said, we're canceling all games today. I don't know.
Yeah, like they did with Kobe. Did they cancel games for Kobe? No, I think they made them all play. I think they canceled the Lakers game and maybe the Clippers too. But yeah, so I don't. If they just play the games again, and even if they take a week off, they're just moving it all back.
Yeah, because this game isn't canceled. This game will be postponed. It has to be played because we're in playoff basketball. This might be different if it was in the regular season. In the regular season, honestly, if you boycott a game, the other team gets the W, right? And we move on. And maybe, honestly, that's even more powerful because you're giving up the win. Whereas in this scenario, nobody's getting the L or the W. It's just postponing it a day or two. So you would think the best way to go about it would just be to come out and call a spade as opposed to calling it a protest. You can still do a lot of good with it, I feel like. Still draw a lot of attention.
Yeah, because everybody that was going to tune into the three NBA games today would then be talking about...
Yeah, and at the very least, if it's somebody that doesn't know what's going on, could be like, oh my gosh, the NBA canceled basketball today? Now I need to Google and find out what the heck was so important to cancel a game. And then you've got somebody who didn't know that now does.
Yeah, it'll be... I mean, the only way it's different is if... they just cancel the season, which again, I don't feel like is about to happen, but
I hope not.
Crazier things have happened.
And yeah, and that is different too. If they come out and say, hey, we're boycotting the rest of the season because we don't think enough attention is being brought to this topic. And that would be very powerful. I don't want to see that happen. I would think that would be sad, but I think it would be meaningful.
We'll take our world championship, however it is, whether it's a canceled season or not. We'll take a UCF world championship. So I don't care how it
ends up happening. If the college football season doesn't happen, you best believe I will be printing 2020 national champion shirts, or I guess 2021, since that's when the championship game would have been.
So what else? Do we have anything else? I think we've been here for about an hour, so I don't know if we have anything else going on, but I think we're
I think it's so set. Nice to be disagreeing about football again.
I don't agree that it's nice, no. So true to form, I don't think it's very nice to disagree about stuff. I am excited for the games. I don't think either one of us are going to any games, so
refunded my ticket money yet, so who knows? If I'm in that 25%, I may be sitting in the stands. I kind of think there'll be boosters with way more clout than me that are using that 25%, but we shall see. My dad asked me, he's like, hey, do you want to just go up and tailgate? He's like, I don't even care to sit in the stands. Just sit in the parking lot, listen to the sounds, watch it on a big screen TV. I might be down for that.
I think I'm good. But Gainesville's a lot easier trip than Tallahassee.
That's true. That is true.
Like an 8-hour round trip to do that. And then, you know, then you got to like sober up and stuff. Like I can get unlimited high noons out of your fridge. So like, who cares? Like, I'll just tailgate at your house.
Yeah, but in football season, it's going to be bourbon, baby. High noon summer. Well, come on.
With my team, I need the bourbon. So, but yeah, like, because I assume you won't, be going to many games. I know I'm probably not going to any games.
Yeah, I mean, more than likely I'm not going to any, but we'll see. Yes, there'll be lots of college football. Now, I want to know, when does game day resume? Are we getting the game day this Saturday because there's the lone week zero game, or are we not getting it till the week after, or are we getting it the week after?
Will they even do game day? Doesn't that kind of encourage? Will they do game day?
Well, but
from
they might
the
do it from
studio?
A studio. I mean,
I would assume so.
I can't imagine that they don't do game day in some form, and that would make me really sad. That's part of my Saturday routine for like 20 years.
So I know we disagree on this, shocker, but I don't love game day. Ugh. I think it's gotten. I used to. I think the show has changed too much, and I will leave it at that. I enjoy parts of game day. I enjoy the sentimental stuff.
I'm pretty sure I'm on 20 straight years of crying on a game day episode.
Parts of game day just suck now. And I think the Bear is the worst part of college game day. He's terrible. His picks are terrible. I was talking with Dan Thompson about this the other day. I'll never forget the 2015 game. Everyone in America knew that Florida State was going to blow Florida. The line came out. Florida minus three within an hour. It had flipped to Florida State minus three, an obvious error by the folks that in Vegas that set that line. That doesn't happen often for something to take that 7-point swing. So he said Florida was his lock of the day that day. I'll never forget that, watching that and just thinking, this ass has no, like, everyone knows what's about to come. Florida comes out and scores 2 points. He does that, and that's just like one that pops in my mind because it has to do with my team.
Right.
But he does that so often. Like, his hitting percentage, the best gamblers in Vegas are like 60%, right? Nobody beats Vegas. Like, they just win a little more than they lose.
Sure.
His hit percentage is like 15%. Like, he's so bad.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's like a pet peeve I have. I do love Corso. I love Corso's picks. That is the best part of game day to me. The second best is the intro music with Big and Rich.
Yep.
And so after that, I'm taking it or leave it there. So, I'll be over.
Heartstring story every year or every week.
I usually just catch it later. Also, I got into soccer a couple of years ago, and there's live soccer on as opposed to just four old. I think Pollock's somewhat an idiot. Howard's got no clue what's going on.
I love Pollock.
I do. I mean, he's an idiot, but I mean, So I like Fowler.
I do too.
He doesn't even do it. Reese does it now. So yeah, like, I don't know. They've just lost something with me. I like Herb Street. That's who I do like on the show and coach, obviously. But so I'll be over 11:45 to watch Corso's picks. I stopped watching it when I started watching soccer because I'll watch live sports over four old men talking about football. You know, like,
we'll blow up the water bounce house in the backyard. We'll tell the two
six-year-olds
that Elena is their responsibility. They can go down the water slide. The pool is literally like 6 inches deep, so there's not any risk there. She can just go up and down that slide 87,000 times, jump on the trampoline. We can sit on the couch with the sliders open so we can see them and watch football. It'll be perfect.
Yeah. No, I'm with it. They can watch Bryant, too. He'll be fine.
Yeah.
He's tough.
Well, he can play with my babies, too.
Yeah. Shams, ladies, man, already. Shams, Bryant, you've got 25 years to find you a pick here. One of the two. So the NBA has postponed its playoff games today from Shams. The Athletic breaking news guy, like Diet Woj. If they're just postponing the games, then it's not I mean, it's not necessarily
it's not a boycott necessarily, but I mean, you want
to. It is their boycott that led to
sure.
So, and it sounds like the NBA players have called for a meeting today in Orlando to determine the next steps after this. I think there's a 50-50 chance the season gets canceled. Maybe I'm just, it's the pessimist in me, but I think there's a really good chance of that.
So I don't know if we have anybody that listens that's in Louisiana or Texas. I don't know if you've seen this, but Hurricane Laura was millions updated to a Cat 4, millions of people. They're calling the storm surge unsurvivable, which I feel like is either very incendiary or incredibly scary, you know, one or the other. So anybody that's listening, if you're in that path, you better go. They're saying between 1 and 3 a.m. overnight, it's going to make landfall somewhere between Texas and Louisiana. But that close to the mouth of the Mississippi, an survivable storm surge is not going to be good.
Yeah, definitely scary thoughts and prayers with everybody kind of in the path there. It's always like you're thankful that it doesn't hit you and that it's not, you know, coming to.
Yeah, a week ago we were looking at how this would come to Florida, you know, would it affect us? But,
it sucks for the people
at MacDill turn the radar or turn the, you know, the whatever their equipment on and moved on and out of our way. Yeah. Do you know my mother swears that that happens? she swears that's why Tampa doesn't get hit.
I don't know her super well, but I mean,
it just cracks me up because she's very logical generally, but she's like, oh, Tampa hasn't been hit in 100 years. It's because MacDill can move them. Oh, sure, Mom. I bet that's what it is.
That's exactly what it is. Hey, I mean, it's something. So
hey,
I'll take it.
There you go.
Whatever it takes. So.
All right,
cool.
I think that'll do it for us. We'll catch everybody next week. And hopefully nothing changes in college football because no news is good news this close to the start of the season.
For sure. Sounds good. I'll see you next week. Actually, I'll see you Saturday, but I'll see you next week.
There you go.
Cincinnati, and we all got really happy. Grabbed a bowl of that skyline chili along the way. Then we rolled on into Canton, scared the hell out of Marilyn Manson, and the party started happening. Hey, hey, hey. And in the middle of a Charleston night, we ran into Jessica White, and a little moonshine got us right plum smack inside. And we're coming to your city. Gonna play our guitars and sing you a country song. We'll all be flying higher than a jet airliner. And if you want a little bang in your yin yang, come along. Well, we broke down in Greenville in the middle of a hayfield, but a Bud Light truck pulled up and helped us out. And rocked it out. Oh, and Chippewa's where we go when we're up in Buffalo. Don't you know those Yankees drink enough to drown? Yeah, we're coming to your city. Gonna play our guitars and sing you a country song. We'll all be flying higher than a jet airliner. Come along, come along. Listen up. Now LA's got the freaks at Pink's and $15 drinks, and San Antonio is a wild, wild rodeo. And if Phoenix Phoenix, Arizona. We drank way too much Corona, and we woke up by the river in Jeff City, Mo. And we're coming to your city. Gonna play our guitars and sing you a country song. We'll all be flying higher than a jet airliner. And if you want a little bang in your yin yang, come along. City. We're gonna play our guitars and sing you a country song.
Woo! Rich, there for a minute, I really thought we were in trouble.
Doggone right, Big.
Yeah!
We'll all be flying higher than a jet airliner. And if you want a little bang in your yin yang, if you want a little zing in your zang zang, if you want a little ting in your tang tang, come along.
Come along.
Yeah, we're coming.